Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, you can be the greatest, you can be the best. You can be the King Kong banging on your chest. You can beat the world, you can beat the war. You can talk to God, go banging on his door. You can throw your hands up, you can beat the clock. Yeah. You can move a mountain, you can break rocks. You can be a master, don't wait for luck. Dedicate yourself and you can find yourself.
Standing in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And the world's gonna know your name.
You can walk straight through hell with a smile. You could be the hero, you could get the gold. Breaking all the records you thought never could be broke. Yeah, do it for your people, do it for your pride. You're never gonna know if you never even try. Do it for your country, do it for your name. Cause there's gonna be a day when you're
standing in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And the world's gonna know your name.
Austin Dillon, driver of the Dallas Chevrolet, and you're listening to The Pit Stop with Tim DeSpain.
Live from Talladega, Alabama, you're in The Pit Stop with Tim DeSpain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network. Big thanks to Wes Pope and Top Trails, Talladega's premier outdoor off-road adventure park. If you haven't been there, you're missing a great time. Load up your dirt bike, ATV, or side-by-side and head to Talladega. With nearly 3,000 acres and more, and more than 100 miles of trails, they have all kinds of terrain for the whatever riding you like. From steep, rocky hill climbs to some of the deepest mud holes you've ever seen. For more information, look them up at www.toptrails.net, like them on Facebook at Top Trails Outdoor Park, or call 256-649-0245. Top Trails Outdoor Park. Get your mud on. All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, live from Talladega, Alabama. We've got a great show going on tonight, but at this time we have our Reverend from out there on the left coast, Reverend Joe. Let's bring Reverend Joe on and get everything started at this time. Reverend Joe, how you doing, bud? Sorry about the technical difficulties last week, but we got it all ironed out.
Well, I can hear you today, Tim. It's good to hear your voice, and I'm glad you got it worked out. That was a little bit funny last week, a little like you had to be a little bit crazy on your end. It doesn't always go the way it should.
I know. And you know, that's just all part of it. You know, Suzanne bought me this new in-home studio, and I finally got all the kinks ironed out of it. But how you doing, bud? You doing okay?
Yeah, I was pretty good mood. I was just picking on Suzanne a minute ago. I was giving her a hard time. You know, when you call in, the thing says you're now in the host's queue. And I don't know where this term queue has come from over the years, but I told her I wanted to be in the W. I didn't want to be in the queue. But anyway, I caught her off guard a little bit there. Well, I know you got a big show tonight, so maybe we better get started, huh?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, my friend. You got the floor.
All righty. Lord, we come before you tonight, and we thank you so much. We thank you for all you do. We thank you for all you are. We ask special protection over our friends in the Northeast who are dealing with a heck of a snowstorm. And I guess it's calmed down finally, but I ask you for safety for all of them. I ask you for all our safety for all our friends that are traveling up and down the East Coast to get ready to head to Florida soon and so on. So please, Lord, be with all of them. Be with all of the people who listen to this radio show. Be with all those who are racers all over the country working on their cars, getting ready for a new season, and all those that are racing at various places over this weekend. Give us a good show. Keep the bugs out of the system. And, Lord, we thank you so much for sending your son to die for our sins so we didn't have to. And we thank you for that in the name of Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. Amen.
Amen, Reverend Jeff. Great invocation. You want to throw out there to all our listeners where everybody can follow you at on social media?
Yeah, they can look us up on ontrackwithjesus.com. I'm sorry, .org. And it's also ontrackwithjesus@aol.com is our email address. And we're always glad to talk to everybody. And you know, we're on the verge of the new season coming up, so naturally our fundraising, we're pushing like crazy to get the budget together that we need to get out to the places we're hoping to go. And as many of you have seen, the way the schedule is this year, the West Coast races are all right in the very beginning of the season, which kind of really kicks the heck out of the budget. But God's good, and we'll get it done. And we thank all you folks that have helped us in the past. And you can go right there to our website, ontrackwithjesus.org, and make a donation there. No amount's too small. And we thank you all for that. And I pray that you have a great show tonight, Tim, and that you got some good guests. Have a good time, and we'll be talking to you next week.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, Reverend Joe, and hope everything works out. Everybody follow Reverend Joe on all of his social media stuff. really great guy, covers the sport really well. Reverend Joe, have a great one, bud.
Thank you. You too.
All right, Reverend. Okay, that was Reverend Joe. And at the time, we've had a couple of callers drop. I think it might have been Steven or so. But we've had a lot of news come out of NASCAR. They've got the media tour up at Charlotte Motor Speedway started Monday. And our first guest on the show coming on at the bottom of the hour at 6:30 Central, 7:30 Eastern, we've got veteran pit reporter Vince Welch. And I'm pretty sure he has some news to break. And at the top of the hour and everything open wheel with Tony Bajinski, we've got a driver of the number 19 Porsche that drove the 24-hour Rolex at Daytona this past weekend, Mr. Michael Lehrer. He's coming on and talk with Tony and all of us about that. And at this time, I want to bring my good friend, CEO of SpeedwayDigest.com, Mr. Steven Wilson.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Steven, looks like y'all dodged that Juno thing up there with all that snow, didn't you?
Yeah, man, we missed a bunch of that. We only got a little dusting around here, and a little farther to the north of us looked like they got hammered pretty hard.
Yeah, they did. I had seen where, you know, New York sort of dodged the big blunt of it, but one of our faithful followers, Terry Norgel, lives up there in Boston, and I'm pretty sure from the picture she's putting on Facebook, they got hit pretty hard.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. And even farther north, I think they said up in like Maine, New Hampshire, they got about 19, 20 inches of snow on the ground right now.
Good Lord. I'm glad I live in Alabama, but I ain't going to lie. But anyway, we've got a little bit before we come up on the bottom of the hour, we've got Mr. Vince Welch, former pit reporter for ESPN. He's got a big announcement to make, which I think I've already put it out there. He's going to work with Fox Sports. Vince is going to come on to the bottom of the hour, and at the top of the hour, we've got Michael Lehrer. I can't wait to talk to him and see what it's like staying up 24 hours driving in that Rolex 24 at Daytona. But, Steven, I want to let you have the floor. I know you've got a lot of big news. We've got so much to cover. I'm sure we're not going to be able to cover it before we get to the bottom of the hour. A lot of stuff coming out of Charlotte today and yesterday with the media tour. And I guess probably one of the biggest topics coming out of NASCAR is Jeff Gordon announced Friday at Hendrick Motorsports. He met with his team, met with everybody there. It's going to be his last full-time season at Hendrick's in 2015. And from what I understand, I don't know for sure, but I'm pretty sure he's going to drive a limited schedule. But you got the floor, buddy, if you want to talk about that or any other thing that popped up. I got an email from Kerry Tharp, from NASCAR early. Kerry Tharp, they reinstated a crew chief or something, but whatever you want to talk about first, you go ahead, and then I'll come in behind you.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll just go ahead. I was going to leave the Jeff Gordon thing to the end, but we'll just kick off with that. So Friday, Jeff Gordon, he decides that 2015 is going to be his last season in the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series. There was some talk last year. He was on a press conference. They were talking about this Friday afternoon that there were some talk last year around June or July time that 2015 may or may not be the last time that he runs full-time in the Sprint Cup Series. And right after Homestead, it looked like the agreement was made with Hendrick Motorsports, and they kind of kept everything under wraps with Jeff Gordon. 2015 will be, in fact, his last season. He did not say that he was going to retire from, you know, NASCAR, but he did state in his press conference that he will not run a limited schedule in the 2016 or beyond Sprint Cup Series. That may or may not change. He may go back to running some trucks or maybe running some Xfinity from time to time. That's yet to unfold on what exactly is going to go on there. He's got a lot of stuff with his kids. They're coming up. They're starting to race some go-karts and some quarter midgets and things of that nature, so he's got a lot going on there. Jeff Gordon is still under a lifetime contract with Hendrick Motorsports, so he, no matter what happens, if he decides that in a few years he wants to come back and race the Sprint Cup Series or, you know, Nationwide or, well, I'm sorry, Xfinity, I got to put a quarter in the jar now. He is
yeah, it's
going to
take a while.
Yeah,
it's going to take a while to get
he
used to Stephen. Sorry.
Yeah, he is still under that lifetime contract with Hendrick Motorsports. So since Hendrick doesn't field trucks or the Xfinity Series cars, I'm sure that would be under the Junior Motorsports banner, which is by de facto a Hendrick Motorsports team since they get all their chassis and engines and things of that nature. And even they are expanding into the truck series come in 2015 now. You know, one of the biggest things with Jeff Gordon over the last couple of years is that he has made complaints about his back and the deteriorating his back has become over the last couple of years. He raced throughout the season, and it's some very excruciating pain from time to time. He made mention of it several times in the last couple of years. His back is not getting any better by any means. So this is he's got to get out of the car at this point. He's only 44, 45 years old. He's still relatively young. He still can win and compete for races. But I think his back is probably one of the biggest driving factors at this point to get him out of that car. I can't foresee him to continue on, you know, racing the way that he is, and that especially any kind of back surgery would take months to get out there and, you know, actually recover from that to be able to get in the car again. With that, you know, it's obvious that in 2016 we're probably going to see Chase Elliott take over their number 24 car or whatever car they may decide to field, but that will open up a spot there at Hendrick Motorsports for Chase Elliott to move over in 2016. So, like I said, you know, there's so many things going on with that. You know, he did say that he would still continue to be working there at Hendrick, you know, after he leaves from driving full-time in the car. So he will still be there. He will still be around the sport. He's not leaving by any means, and maybe in the next couple of years, once he gets through maybe some back surgeries or whatever may happen, he may, you know, he may be able to get back in the car, maybe even on a limited schedule. One thing to also note that this year is a significant year for Jeff Gordon. When they go to New Hampshire in September of this year, he will officially become the new Iron Man of NASCAR. Currently, he's at 782 consecutive starts in the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series over 23 seasons. He is just shy of Ricky Rudd by about 20 races at this point. By the time they go to New Hampshire, he will surpass Ricky Rudd as the Iron Man of NASCAR, barring any incidents this year, and which is kind of a feat all in itself to be able to do that over 23 seasons.
Yeah, and you know, Stephen, just read off some of the stats there. His career starts is 761, 11th all time. His consecutive career starts is 761, second all time. So you was right there close, bud. He has 92 career wins, third all time. 77 career poles, third all time. His first full season was 1993. His first start was November 15th, 1992 at Atlanta Motor Speedway. His first win was May 29th, 1994 at Charlotte Motor Speedway. His first pole was October 8th, 1993 at Charlotte Motor Speedway. And just to throw this out there, I've done a little bit of research on the NASCAR Hall of Fame, and the way the eligibility works, if he does not race another race, but if he races one race in 2016, after he said he's not going to race after his full season in 2015, if he races one race, he's not eligible for a NASCAR Hall of Fame. He has to be out. If he does not race one, he will be eligible for the class of 2020. But I'm pretty sure he's going to race somewhere here, yonder, whatever. You know what he is, Steve.
Oh, I would not expect anything else. You know, maybe not in 2016, maybe 2017, we may see him. I think he's going to have to take that year. One unanswered question at this point is we saw Jeff Gordon win last year four times in the Sprint Cup Series. He's eight wins away from breaking the 100 mark. I don't see him breaking that 100 mark this year. There's no way with the competitiveness in the sport that he can win 8 races this year. I see him going on to win another 3 or 4 races again this year. But one question I have is, what happens if he wins the Sprint Cup Series championship at the end of the season? Does he come back in 2016, or does he just hang up his hat? I mean, we've never had that before where we've had a series winner, barring an incident, not come back and contend or at least defend that championship in the following season.
You know, Stephen, I ain't thought about that. That's a very good point. I mean, yeah. Does he come back and contend, I mean, you know, to do it again? Yeah. Or does he say, well, I want it, I'm going to go out on top, go out on a high note. That'd probably be all up to Jeff Gordon, but you brought up a very good point there, bud. And you know, he's been in our sport for 23 years. And you were talking about his back. Yeah, he's got back issues. And you know, he's got a family now. He's got the kids and everything, and I was listening to Moody and Ray Evernham when I was coming home from work on Sirius XM 90, and they were talking about, you know, guys like Ricky Carmichael. You know, Ricky Carmichael, the motocross king, you know, he was able to retire at really 30 years old. And, you know, it's like the age limit's dropping because, you know, the money's getting better, all that. But just to throw that out there, Stephen, I mean, The younger guys are coming in younger, but you know Jeff Gordon was really right there with Dale Earnhardt, and he done a lot for the sport, bud.
Well, I don't think you can take anything away from Jeff Gordon. One interesting thing that I always have to look at back on is I've been watching the sport for over 25 years at this point. I remember before Jeff Gordon even entered into the sport, and I remember Richard Petty still out there running around, as well as a lot of other guys that are nowhere to be seen these days. You know, it was always funny back then is that you would have so many complainers out there because he's winning so many races, but then again you had the same thing with Dale Earnhardt Sr. He won so many races that there was so much animosity against that, but now Jeff Gordon's gotten to the end of his career, and now a lot of these people are like, well, what do I do now? They remember him when he was winning those races. A lot of these people were probably rooting against him, to tell you the truth. And now they've got somebody that's getting ready to go out of the sport, and it's like, well, what next? What do we do next? And as I was talking with Tom on the balance on Saturday morning out of Indianapolis, you know, a lot of those drivers or a lot of these fans out there, when Dale Sr. passed away, they became de facto Dale Jr. fans. But they don't have that with Jeff Gordon, so do these fans become Chase Elliott fans when he gets in the 24 car or whatever car may be fielded next year? Or will they find somebody else? It's a very funny situation, especially for a lot of these old-time fans that have been around the sport for so many years.
Yeah, and you brought up a very good point again, Stephen. Is it going to be the 24 car? You know, when Dale Sr. passed away, Richard Childress, he didn't retire the number. He just sort of held it back. Do you think it could possibly be the number 25 car, or maybe the number 84? What doesn't Hendrick come to 84 too?
You know, I'm not even 100% sure on what it might be. You know, Hendrick has a couple of numbers out there. I think they even still have the number 46 car from the Days of Thunder days that they've continuously paid the interest fee on to reserve that number for them every year, just as Richard Children did with the number 3 after they became the 29 until Austin Dillon got back in the car in 2014. Richard still continued to pay for the number to hold that number. So whether it'll be the 24 or whether it'll be something else, it's hard to tell. I'm not even sure at this point. We've got a whole year. I guess as we get to the year, we would probably expect at some point for those announcements to be made sooner than later. I know that back at Homestead, Rick Hendrick made some comments about 2015. He was looking for a way to get Chase Elliott in a couple of Sprint Cup races, and I think that was in preparation of moving him full-time over to Hendrick Motorsports. They can't do it with Junior Motorsports just because of the affiliation, because of the team limit. They are still, Junior Motorsports is still by all means considered a Hendrick Motorsports satellite, so they're not able to field a Sprint Cup Series car, nor do I think they have, you know, do they really want to get in on that, even though that Hendrick would be funding this deal for them. I think they're going to have to look outside of it. I don't know where they're going to be able to look at to do this, but it will have to be another Hendrick-affiliated team that would field a car for Chase this year in a couple of races.
Yeah, tenfold, but, and, you know, with Jeff Gordon stepping out, and, you know, Chase Elliott's driving the number 9 for Junior Motorsports, you know Hendrick Motorsports are not, they're not going to let Chase get away and go anywhere else, you know. His dad, Bill, drove for Ford, and I read an article on that. I think it was from Tom Jensen, FoxSports.com. About Chase Elliott in a Chevrolet and his dad run a Ford. You know, I no complaints about either one, but Hendrick Motorsports is not going to let Chase Elliott get away from Junior Motorsports. They're going to put him in something.
Well, yeah, I mean, the contract with Chase Elliott is actually done through Hendrick Motorsports with the de facto him driving at Junior Motorsports. So they're not letting him get away. Earlier this week, they actually, I believe it was on SiriusXM, where they actually interviewed Bill Elliott, Chase's dad, where he said he even approached Ford to put Chase in a car following his K&N days. And they didn't have spot for him, and they, as he says, there were two different opinions on what each side wanted to put Chase in a car and insert Rick Hendrick, who came to them and said, I'm going to put you in a car, you know, for a couple of years. We're going to put you in some trucks. We're going to put you in a Nationwide Series car. And now we're going to move you up the ranks just as I do with the rest of my drivers. So, you know, it's kind of funny to see him in a Chevrolet, because early in Chase's career, he did drive Fords in some of the various series that he came up through. And it just, you know, it just didn't happen to him continue on with that relationship. And now he's on the Chevrolet banner. And definitely, he's not getting away from Hendrick Motorsports. I foresee him. I'm not exactly sure how his contract is actually written out with Hendrick and Junior Motorsports. But just as Jeff Gordon, just as Dale Jr., and just as Jimmy Johnson, all those guys earned a lifetime contract with Hendrick Motorsports. I would foresee that something along those lines will probably come along in 2016 with Chase Elliott.
Yeah, I would agree with every word that you said, Steve. And I bet you them people at Ford right now, Tim Durr, don't take this the wrong way if you're listening, they're probably eating crow. I know they are, because that young man's going to be great. He's going to be something. He's going to be something. But, Stephen, I want to change the subject. We got a few minutes here. I don't know if you got the email from NASCAR. This come out of NASCAR right before I left work from Kerry Tharp. NASCAR has reinstated Kelly Johnson, a crew member in the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, upon his successful completion of NASCAR Substance Abuse Policy Road to Recovery Program. On November 18, 2014, Johnson was found to have violated Sections 12-1, Actions Detrimental to Stock Car Racing, and 19, violation of NASCAR substance abuse policy of a NASCAR rule book. Now, you know, this gentleman, whatever, you know, we're not going to say he was on something illegal, you know, but he went through the Road to Recovery program. And I want to bring this up, if I can. Why would Jeremy Mayfield not, I mean, why would he not go through it? Is it an ego thing or something?
You know, I've asked him that question directly on several occasions, and he refuses to answer that question on why he will not go through the Road to Recovery program. He's still under the assumption that NASCAR was out to get him, that NASCAR lied, that NASCAR tampered with his samples, and that he is in the right. He has never admitted to this day that he did or did not do what he said he did. He claims that he was on something else. I just don't understand. But as I said, you know, I have asked him that question at least twice as to why he will not do it, and he refuses to answer that question.
And it don't make no sense, David. I mean, you know, everybody in this world, we're not perfect. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to do things wrong. And just admit when you got caught doing something wrong, I mean, all he's got to do is, you know, go through that road to recovery thing, and he's back at a race car. And this gentleman, Kelly Johnson, he's not the only one that has done it. You know, since NASCAR really started releasing the substance abuse policy, they have, you know, found people here and there. But every driver, what have you, crew member, or whoever have you, they have agreed to go through that road to recovery program. And I just don't understand it. I mean, I don't know. I don't know, Steve.
You know, I don't understand it myself. You know, as you said, there's been so many drivers that have drivers. You look at A.J. Allmendinger, you look at the crewmen that have gone through this program, and they're all back in sport for the most part. I mean, there's probably a few out there that never re-entered the sport or, you know, moved on to other careers. But at least they went through the road to recovery program so that if they ever want to get back, they're able to come back into the sport. I just don't understand it. It's hard for me to understand. I'm not going to try and sit and, you know, try and figure some of what these people, you know, are thinking. But, you know, I asked Jeremy Mayfield that question at least twice that I know of over the last couple of years. And, you know, you can't get an answer out of him. So, you know, if he wants to refuse to take the road to recovery program that NASCAR has, well, you know, then he can sit at home and run around the dirt tracks and, you know, win $500 on the weekend versus to, you know, running in a car and getting $10,000 on the weekend. You know, if he's happy with that, then, you know, let him be.
You got that right, Steven. Some people are just hard-headed. You can't fix stupid with duct tape. So, Jeremy Mayfield, you're on your own, bud. Steven, we got Vince Webb coming on. Let's bring Vince on. Vince is in Charlotte at the media tour. I'm sure he's got a lot to talk about. I know he has a big announcement to make. So let's bring Vince Welch, veteran pit reporter for NASCAR, Pit Stop, Tennis Fan, Steven Wills.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Vince, how you doing tonight, bud?
Man, that was quite an introduction.
Well, thanks. You're welcome. Well, I mean, what else do you want us to do for a man that's been in the sport for that long? And Vince, we want to thank you for everything that you did over at ESPN and everything. Y'all are doing a really great job. I hate to see everything happen like it did, but you brought us everything that we wanted to watch on TV. You're just a class act, bud. We appreciate everything that you've done over there.
Well, I appreciate that. We had a lot of fun with the ESPN group, and you know, it was 8 good years of doing NASCAR on ESPN, and all good things come to an end, as they say, and that's okay. You know, that is what it is, and everybody has to regroup and move on, and we enjoy those times and have a lot of good memories from the group that we had together, and as they say, one door closes, another door opens. So I'm happy to have an opportunity to join on with the Fox team and continue broadcasting NASCAR and just do it on a different network. So I'm thrilled about that and looking forward to, you know, building those new relationships with all those great people at Fox that are passionate about the sport, just as those were at ESPN.
Yeah, and Vance, we want to congratulate you on that, you know, signing that contract with them. And I know, you know, you were going to come on last week, and, you know, you had some issues come up, but everybody here at the Pit Stop Radio, Stephen Wilson and I, Suzanne, we want to give you a big round of applause.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I'll call in like once a week just to make myself feel good.
Vince, you can call in anytime you want to. Just watch out for my good friend Larry McReynolds. He's an Alabama fan. I'm an Auburn fan, and I'm probably going to get Suzanne stirred up. But, Vince, anyway, I know you're at the Charlotte Media Tour. Are you still in Charlotte, or you done made it back home?
No, I came home today, so I was in Charlotte Monday and part of today. So it's an exciting time down there, that's for sure, though, with the media tour and the various teams making different announcements, and gets everybody thinking about racing just around the corner. So it certainly is an exciting time to be there, that's for sure. Definitely felt the vibe there yesterday and today being down there. And, of course, I think that's the signal that Daytona is just around the corner.
Yes, sir, and we can't wait. We cannot wait. Yeah, I know you know Russell Brown, public relations director here at Talladega Super Speedway. Russell keeps on telling me, he said, Tim, you need to go to that media thing. I mean, you can get all kind of information out of it. I said, well, Russell, you know, I work a full-time job. You know, I have to pick and choose wherever I can go. But, yeah, I'm thinking about maybe next year, me and Suzanne. I'm Stephen Wilson and his wife, they have been before, but I'm thinking about next year trying to make that.
Yeah, it's a great event, and for the most part, it's the time when the teams roll out any big announcements that they've got to make and, you know, introduce their driver lineups. And for the most part, we know what those are. But, for instance, you know, having Carl Edwards formally introduced, you know, with the other drivers as part of the Joe Gibbs team, it's just kind of a kickoff for 2015 and the upcoming season. And it's a good time. You know, it's a good week to be down there. And certainly you're around other people that, whether it's from a media standpoint or certainly a team standpoint, that they're all about NASCAR and they're excited to be a part of it and looking forward to the season getting going. So it's a good vibe around there, that's for sure.
Yes, sir, Tim Bull. And Vince, I'm going to hand you over to my good friend Stephen Wilson, and because I know he's chomping at the bits. He wants to ask a few questions if you got some time, and I'll let him throw it over to me when he gets done. And then if you agree, can you take a caller once you get done with me?
Sure.
Okay, thanks, Vince. I want to hand you over to Stephen, bud.
Okay.
Hey, Vince. Steve Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com. The media tour over the years has fundamentally changed from the days when R.J. Reynolds originally started this thing. We're more of in an era where instant consumption of media online. How does that change the perspective on how things are actually reported, not only at the media tour, but how you report them on the weekend throughout the NASCAR season during the telecast?
Well, I think that, you know, the nice thing about the telecast is, you know, it's live, so it has that immediacy to it. You know, in this day and age of social media, it's, you know, for instance, you know, if you're on Twitter, as I'm sure many of your listeners are, and for instance, Brian France did his State of NASCAR address, and you have a variety of reporters that are there basically live tweeting his announcements and his speech. So you can be sitting down in Alabama and not be at the NASCAR media tour, but still be getting that information immediately, almost to, you know, as if you were there sitting in the audience yourself. So certainly technology has changed the way we absorb the sport, and it's changed the way we report the sport, and not just the sport of NASCAR, but all sports. You know, they've got the Super Bowl going on in Arizona this weekend and you know, media day there today. And so you can follow the events as they're happening. Maybe it's the, you know, the big storm they're having up in the Northeast. Whatever is happening that is of major significance, no matter where you are in the world, you can follow it as it's happening because of the technology of today. And I think we see, you know, technology growing and expanding in motorsports as well as, you know, all sports. But whether it's in-car cameras or, you know, in IndyCar or Formula One, the telemetry that is used, you know, there's a variety of different, you know, NASCAR is going to officiate the sport as far as what happens on pit lane a lot differently this year, and that's all because of upgraded technology. So, you know, as technology evolves, the sport evolves as well, and the communication around the sport evolves. And I think the fans are the ones that benefit from that. The participants obviously benefit as well, but it's a great benefit for the fans. You know, if you can't get to a race and you can't watch it on TV, maybe you have some function you have to be at, you can really, you know, via Twitter, follow the race as people live tweet it. You know, it's almost like being there. And so, you know, I think it's a real benefit for the fans the way technology has evolved. And I don't think it's going to be stopping anytime soon, that's for sure. It's going to be interesting to see how that changes over the next 10 years.
And that kind of leads into my next question. Earlier this year, NBC and Fox announced that they would be working together in the NASCAR coverage on the technological aspect, as well as bringing in Xfinity this year, that NASCAR in the second tier. There's going to be a lot of cooperation with that, so it's going to kind of be a little bit different as far as what NASCAR fans are used to seeing, especially in the fact of two different networks working together. How do you see the crossover between you guys at Fox and NBC working together with that announcement to bring the sport closer to fans, especially with Xfinity coming on board?
Yeah, I think that what you'll see, or maybe what you won't see, is where the biggest cooperation between Fox and NBC are taking place. And a lot of that is what they do behind the scenes, whether it's the production trucks and the facilities that are being used, some of the technology to make sure everybody's on the same page. You know, each network has its own broadcast crew that, you know, you're not going to see those, you know, official, you know, those team members crossing over onto different networks. But what you will see, I think, is a lot of cooperation behind the scenes and some of the different production elements and some of the big ticket items, if you will, from a production standpoint, that just makes it easier if the two sides, you know, cooperate and help out one another. It's not like they're going to be competing for the same rating on the same day because they have two different parts of the season. So I think that's where the biggest crossover and the biggest co-op, if you will, exists. And I think that's good. You know, it's so expensive to broadcast the sport today. So wherever each of those, you know, each of the two entities can maybe work together to help make that issue a little bit more workable, I think is a good thing. And I think they saw that, recognized it, NASCAR is for it. And I think, again, it's all for the betterment of the product.
And this year, you know, with no testing going into Daytona, we're going to see a fundamental difference with a lot of these teams. We're also going to see a more sense of urgency earlier in the season now that they're one season into this new chase format. And Steve O'Donnell actually made a comment the other day at the State of the Sport where they're looking at possibly having the 2016 package ready by the All-Star race this year. You think what are your feelings on that? And you think NASCAR is going to kind of speed up the 2016 rule package to kind of better position these teams going into next year?
Well, I think, you know, their goal is to get those the new rule package out to the teams as early as possible so the teams can start preparing for those changes to be implemented in 2016. And you know, it takes a long time for you know, those changes to be implemented at, you know, at the team level. So while teams are also preparing for future races in 2015, they also have to have their eye on the changes that are going to be happening in 2016. And you don't start working on those cars, those 2016 cars, when the 2015 season ends. You start working on them as soon as you have the opportunity to start working on them. So, you know, it makes it a lot of effort for the teams, a lot of extra work for the teams, but that's part of it. And I think it's great that NASCAR can get them the changes as soon as possible. Certainly the teams, I know, appreciate that because it just gives them more time to get ready and more time to adapt. I'm looking forward to, before we start thinking about 2016, I'm excited about the things that, you know, I think we're going to see in 2015, but, yeah, that was certainly one of the items on the state of the sport addressed by Brian Franz that, you know, I think the teams welcomed for sure, that they were going to be getting that information sooner rather than later.
Well, Vince, I appreciate you taking the time to come on tonight. Good luck this year with Fox, and I'm going to throw you back over to Tim.
Okay, thanks, Steve.
Hey, Vince, I know you was up there yesterday and everything and talking about Brian Franz with the state of the sport address. He mentioned that there was not going to be any changes in the chase format this year, but he did mention that they were going to police the side skirts, you know, when the teams last year were pulling them out. Exactly when he says police, are they going to let them do it? Are they going to not let them pull the side skirts out?
They're not going to let them do that anymore. So, you know, you won't see teams pulling on those side skirts to create that extra downforce this year. And I think they recognized in the later stages of last season that that was going to be something that they were not going to allow in 2015, but they were so far down the road with it already in 2014 that, you know, there was no sense at that point making the change. But you know, something that I know they had on their list well before last season ended. And so no surprise there. And, you know, I think that as long as everybody's playing the same rule, then whatever rule they decide on is fine. And I don't think that you'll see, you know, you're not going to see anybody trying to get around that, because it's going to be pretty easy to police, I believe.
Yeah, and, you know, with the new pit road cameras and all that, too, then the NASCAR announced, I think they're only going to have 10 officials down on pit road, and everything else is going to be done out of the trailer as far as policing pit stops and everything, too. Correct, Vince?
Yes, they have a trailer, you know, a hauler, if you will, that is kind of a command center that officials can fit in that trailer, and they can look at the various cameras that cover the entire pit road, and they can see, you know, if crew members get over the wall too soon, if a car enters into a pit box, too many pit boxes in advance, or actually moves over the line of his pit box. And then you have that on videotape, and it's not just, I think he was over the line. You actually have it on videotape that you can go back and look at it, you know, as if it's, quote unquote, like an instant replay that an NFL official would look at. It's similar to that concept, and they'll be able to those calls right there with videotape support. So I think I know they worked on that a lot last year. That was actually, they used it a lot last year in regards to just kind of a dry run. It obviously wasn't used to actually do the officiating last year, but it was up and moving and working, so they could not roll into this year and try it for the very first time. They've actually, you know, had that in motion last year and worked out some of the kinks. So they're going to get that going, and it'll be interesting to see as the season rolls on. It'll be interesting to see how that unfolds, and I think it's going to be a benefit for the sport. But it'll be different not seeing all those officials down there on pit road.
Yeah, I do too, Vince, and I can't wait to see it. I think mine and Steven might be going to a race before I am. I know we're going to Richmond, and then both Talladegas, I might be going to Atlanta. I might be going to a race before Steven. We might be going to Atlanta, but I can't wait to get and see exactly how this is going to work. I think it's going to be really neat, Vince. But,
they want to try to be efficient in their calls and be more consistent with their calls, and the videotape allows them to do that.
Yeah, yeah. And right quick before, I got the phone lines have lit up, Vince, but I want to ask you, what is your take on Jeff Gordon announcing that this 2015 will be his last full-time season?
Well, it's hard to believe, isn't it? You know, we can all remember Jeff coming in as the young guy, and now he's going out retiring, if you will. And I think it's going to be a great season. I hope Jeff has a great season. He deserves to go out on a positive note. And I think that he and that 24 team showed last year that they still got a lot of fight left in them and a championship-caliber team. And I hope Jeff can go out. I hope the racing gods look down on him with favor this year and allow him to have a great season, that he can go out on a high note. I think that would be great for the sport. I think the fans would appreciate that, you know, if Jeff was right there in the mix for a championship. I know he'd like to go out that way and that entire team. But if anybody deserves it, he does. He changed the sport. I tweeted out a while, when Jeff made that announcement officially, that I think he's the Michael Jordan of NASCAR, because he changed the sport and changed the way fans viewed the sport. It brought more fans to the sport. His stamp on the sport will be felt for years to come. You look at all the drivers from, you know, that the sprints and midgets that came to NASCAR, really because Jeff Gordon opened the door. And he's a guy that changed the sport for the better, and his presence and his successes left a stamp on the sport that I think will be responsible for its growth for years and years to come. So I hope he goes out on a positive note. I hope things. I hope he has a great year this year.
I do too, Vince. And like I said earlier, the phone lines have lit up, Vince. I know your time is limited, but I want to bring on my good friend from upstate New York. Name's Todd Bigsby. His home track is Watkins Glen. I don't know if he's no win or not. But let's bring Todd into the pit stop. Timmy Spain, Stephen Wilson, and Mr. Vince Wells. Todd, how you doing tonight, bud?
I'm doing okay.
Okay. Todd, Mr. Vince Wells here at Fox Sports agreed to take a question, so we picked you. So you got the floor, bud. You can ask Vince a question, and then he's got to go.
All right, well, I appreciate it. And, Vince, thank you for taking the time.
Oh, no problem, Todd. I love Watkins Glen. I love that part of the country, and I love that racetrack. So I enjoy going up there.
Yeah, are you coming up this year?
You know what? I'm not sure that I'll be up this year. I'm trying to think about where I am on that particular weekend. But it's always one of my favorite stops up that way, and I love the town and the lake, and it's just it's a beautiful part of the country. For those people that are listening that have never had the opportunity to go up to Watkins Glen, if you can put one on your wish list, that would be a good one to go see.
Yeah, it is a fun track, and we do enjoy it. I guess my question to you is, I won't get so technical like everybody else had been. I'll ask something really simple. What is your most enjoyable part about doing what you do for your career? I mean, you do such great things for the sport. You know, I've watched you for years on TV and watched you do interviews. So I think what you do is really awesome.
Well, I appreciate that, Todd. I think the thing that I like the most is that is the people that I get to work with, to be honest with you. You know, I'm often asked about particular races or you know, particular events that happen during the course of a race, or what's my most memorable this or my most memorable that. And I think the thing that I like most about the job that I have is the people that I have an opportunity to work with. You know, week in, week out, you're on the road with these people every week. And you know, it's no joke when we say they're our second family, because in a lot of ways we spend as much time with them, if not more time with them during the season, than we do our own families. So those people that we go to the racetrack with every single week, you know, when I just came from ESPN and for 7 years that I was there doing NASCAR with that group, it was, for the most part, the same group every week. And you really get close with those people, and you come to respect and appreciate the jobs that they do. And that's one of the things I'm most looking forward to as I transition over to Fox, is being able to enjoy some of those relationships with people that I might have known on the periphery, but I haven't had an opportunity to develop that closeness with. And that's what I'm really looking forward to. Of course, the racing is great, and you know, I tell people all the time, they say, man, you got a great job. And I say, I do indeed. As far as jobs go, it's a pretty darn good one. It's still a job, but as far as jobs go, it's a darn good one to have. But what I enjoy most about it are the relationships of the people that I work with every single week. And you know, some of those people are people in the garage area and so forth as well, but especially those people on the TV side that you get to know and you get to be friends with and get to be family with. That's pretty special.
Well, that's pretty cool. I really appreciate you taking the time.
All right, Todd. Thank you.
Thanks, Todd. Vince, I know you got to go, but this gentleman right here is calling in, and I know you don't know who he is, but I'm going to let him introduce himself. I have a button that I always play for him, but I don't know if I can. Oh, here it is. This gentleman knows you really well, and I know you know him, but I'm not going to tell you who it is. Let me bring him on.
Say hello to my little friend.
Vince, are you there?
I am.
Well, you know, I used to work for Chip Ganassi. And, you know, I won a 500 with him. And I also won a Rolex 24 Hours at Daytona with him. And I'm the guy that always reached out to you every time I saw you and put my hand upon yours and asked you about a young gun that I just think is tremendous. How is Dylan?
Well, that's my son, and
I know
that.
Who it is.
Yeah, and he's doing fine. He just got back from the Chili Bowl. We enjoyed.
I know. I contacted him. He told me he was out there, and it was my mistake. I said, I think your dad's going to be on the show Thursday. He said, well, he'll be out here Thursday. And I said, okay, well, maybe I've got it wrong, but it's very good. Congratulations on everything you've accomplished. And it was always a great pleasure to see you and ask you about that little young nut, Dylan. And I miss those
days.
Yeah,
they grow up quick, don't they?
Yes, they do. You know, the last picture you showed me, Dylan was in a midget.
Yeah.
And he was not riding the wall. He was riding the fence.
But hey, yeah, that happens. That happens.
Yeah. And you showed me that. Oh, my goodness. You know, but I always made sure that I got around to things and helped sponsor and give money to Dylan when 96th Street Cheeseburgers or something like that was the last place
right.
I got to see him at. And,
that's right.
I always, I'm in a position now that Dylan's one of the guys that I'm looking at to sponsor. And,
very nice of you.
You know, if I can get you the interview and say my last name, that's all I need.
Well, we can make that happen.
Go ahead, Timmy.
I hate to butt in, y'all. Tony, I never told Vince your name. I was trying to let him guess, and I don't think he still don't know who you are. Tell him who you are.
I am Tony Baginski, and I was a tire specialist for Ganassi Racing, and did very well, and also worked for Dale Earnhardt Jr. when he was still with Ganassi, and went down with Juan Pablo Montoya and Felix Sabatis and Memo Rojas and Charlie Kimball. And
you've seen a lot of good racing, haven't you?
Scott Pruitt, yes, won a lot of good races. And now I'm with Brace Yourself, and we are a head and neck device that it doesn't matter if you get hit from the front, the rear, the side, or how you flip, or any rotation, you can turn your head. It doesn't go under your belts. You don't get the vibration and the eye flutter, and it will not break your collarbones or your sternum. And we are making our way into motorsports. We're going to save a lot of lives. We've got a foundation to take care of people that have been injured. And we're going to make our mark in motorsports. And that's how I'd like to help Dylan.
Well, I appreciate that. Well, the safer that we can make it, the better. That's for sure. I don't think anybody would argue with that.
Absolutely.
Appreciate that, Tony. Thank you,
okay,
Tony.
Okay, no problem, Vince.
Okay. Tony, I'm going to keep you on because we're coming up right here short of your segment in the second hour, Everything Open Wheel with Tony Baginski.
Okay.
Vince, thank you very much, my friend, and we'll be in contact. We'd like to get you back on again in the future. And if I don't see you in Atlanta, definitely see you in Richmond and both Talladegas.
Make sure to come out and say hello. Look forward to it.
Yes, sir, I will too. Thanks again, buddy.
Thanks for having
congratulations
me on.
Okay.
Thank you, Vince.
Yeah, take care, guys.
Uh-huh.
All right, yeah. Appreciate it. That was Vince Welch, y'all. He signed a contract with Fox Sports. So Fox Sports and NBC, they've really grabbed everybody up that was at ESPN or wherever, you know, and what was the other news? Rusty Wallace and Kim Coon, Eli Gold are going to MRN, too. Steve and I forgot to bring that up
awesome.
Earlier, but yeah. But we're waiting on the top of the hour, waiting for Michael Lehrer to come on. Lehrer Motorsports, he ran the 24-hour Rolex Daytona this past weekend, and we'll get his thoughts on that. He's going to come on here with Tony. And, Steve, do you have any questions for Tony?
No, I can't think of anything right now. I'm just sitting back and listening to you guys talk.
That was pretty cool, wasn't it?
I spent a lot of days with Vince, but one thing I do want to bring out, and I kind of have told people, the great folks who listen to our show, is that watch what happens. Rico Abreu is going to be great. He had a world record year last year. He won the Chili Bowl, and he's going to go NASCAR racing, boys. K&N Series, just like Kyle Larson did. He signed a deal. He sent me a schedule today. The only USAC race I could find on the 108 races he'll run was the Four Crown Nationals at Eldora. Other than that, he is running nothing but stock cars and the World of Series of Outlaws.
Yeah, so, and, you know, Tony, I'm sorry, go ahead, Tony.
No, I just, you know, I spoke many times. He's a close friend of mine, how good he was. Him and Kyle Larson are best friends, and I knew he was going to make it. And he put the right year together, and now he's gone. And he, you know, he was running 13th at New Smyrna when he had engine problems, but it was his first race, and the engine problems took him out. But a lot of people, he's opened their eyes, and you know he's quite a driver.
Yeah, and you know Tony, me and or Stephen Wilson and I, we talked about that last week. And do you think that was already talked about before the Chili Bowl? Do you think they were already talking about putting him in a NASCAR K&N East Pro Series car, or do you think it come up right after the Chili Bowl, or do you think it was already there, bud?
Let me tell you this. Last time I saw Rico was over at Eldora at the Four Crown, and we talked about it then, and every time we're together, we talk about it, that it was going to happen. Kyle Larson was very helpful in making that happen. So, yeah, they already knew. I didn't have anything to do with him winning the Chili Bowl. He was the world leader in that type of motorsports before he even went to the Chili Bowl. He had so many wins. Incredible young man.
Yeah, right. Yeah. After, you know, I had heard you talk about him earlier and, you know, different times, and I sort of done a little bit of research on him. That Joker can drive a steel out of a car, can't he?
He absolutely can. And, you know, reaches out and says great things for anybody that is challenged. For the people that don't know, Rico is a midget. And let me tell you, he sure can drive one. Sprint cars, stock cars, it doesn't matter. He has impressed me just the way Kyle Larson did. And it's no wonder they're best friends, because they race together. And that's a good team right there, fellas. And I'm going to tell you, everybody will know who Rico Abreu is. And I'm just glad that I was on the bandwagon.
Yeah, I understand, Tony. One heck of a driver. And, Tony, we've got a driver of the number 19, Porsche Valera Motorsports this past weekend at Daytona International Speedway for the Rolex 24. We've got Michael Lear. Let's bring Michael into the show. Pit Stop, awesome. Tim Spain, Stephen Wilson, and Tony B.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Michael, how you doing tonight, bud?
Great. How about you?
I'm doing good, which I know you're a lot warmer down there, way up here in Talladega, but congratulations on running 24 hours. I don't know if I could run 24 hours, but that's a lot. Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, it was a long race, for sure.
Yeah.
How many co-drivers you have?
What's that?
How many co-drivers?
I had two co-drivers, but one of them was kind of an elderly gentleman, so he didn't do as much time as Ricardo Flores and I did.
Wow. Hey, you know, it's just absolutely incredible. You know, I when we did the 24 hours at Daytona and won, our drivers did four-hour stints. And, you know, then they could go right behind the pits. There's a motor coach area back there and rest. But let me tell you, the pit guys like me, we weren't there for 24 hours. It was closer to about 36, and it was a tough night, and I got to give it to you for what you guys do. That's amazing. Congratulations.
Yeah, it was an honor just to be in the race, but I'm definitely grateful for the opportunity. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
and Tony, can I let Stephen jump in? Because, you know, Stephen is very busy. I know Stephen's probably got a couple of questions for Michael Lear here, and then we'll let him, you know, jump off, and then me and you will talk to him. Stephen, go ahead, buddy.
Okay. Good deal.
Hey, Michael. Steve Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com. Earlier, well, I guess it was just a couple of weeks ago, you guys had put out that you're going to run about 16 ARCA races and that you've got Kaz Grala that's also going to join you guys throughout the year. Talk a little about the new cars that they're going to come out, well, more specifically about the Elmore engines that they're going to run in the ARCA series this year. I know there's kind of a split between the new Elmores and the older style motors. What are you seeing as a difference between the two motors, and how do you think it's going to impact the racing when we get to Daytona and then once we go to places like Mobile or the dirt tracks?
The new motor I did the first Daytona test in December, and I didn't have one. I just had my Roush motor from last year. But then I came back with one car with a Roush motor and one with an Elmore motor. And one thing that I noticed was the Elmore motor definitely makes about 100 or 150 horsepower less than the Roush motor. But now with the rules, the Roush motor is actually slower at Daytona than the Elmore motor. It's opened up more. And also the Elmore motor, because it's electronic fuel injection, makes more torque. So to translate that for somebody who doesn't know a lot about motors, it's kind of easier to spin the tires when you're down in like first gear. So I mean, doing burnouts is easier, I guess you could say. So the motor, we had an issue with ours, but I feel like in the future, once they get it worked out, it's going to take time, as anything else does. But having a spec motor for the series and everybody running the same motor is really going to level the playing field and make for some great racing on these big tracks, super speedways, and mile and a half too.
Now, are you guys planning on running the Elmore motor all year long, or are you going to run a combination between the older style Roush motor and the Elmore engine?
Yeah, there's definitely going to be places where the Elmore is almost required, because just ARCA's rules, because it's not required, but it's a spec motor, so they want you to be running it, so they're going to make sure that it's an advantage to run it. But at the same time, when we go to places like Berlin, and used to be Elko last year, but we don't have Elko anymore, but we would actually put restrictor plates on these Roush motors, because you actually don't need all the power at these tiny little tracks. So I'll definitely be bringing my Roush motor to maybe a few short tracks, maybe try the Elmore a couple of times, maybe for Winchester, which is a faster one. But I definitely have a strong connection with Roush, so I get a lot of support from them. So I'll try and continue my sport with them as long as I can.
And this year, ARCA is going to go to more group qualifying that you're seeing in NASCAR. How much of a difference is it going to make to you as a driver and you trying to pair up with somebody else, especially at a track like Daytona, in the way that you're going to go out there and qualify? And do you feel that it's any advantage or disadvantage? And the third part to this question I have is, do you feel that ARCA waited that year to see what's going to happen in NASCAR before they actually instituted that in ARCA?
Yeah, they're definitely trying to be careful and not rush into anything, a big rule change. They're kind of old-fashioned, I guess you could say. They were one of the last series to ever implement the double-file restarts. They finally started that this last year, I think it started. So they're kind of hesitant to make rule changes like that, but that comes with good reason. When you're like that, you can watch a series like NASCAR handle it, because remember in the beginning at Phoenix when they first started the qualifying format, there were a few issues with taping up and cooling down the cars, so a couple of tweaks needed to be made to the cars and the rules to make sure to make it the most the best racing product possible. So maybe ARCA is sitting back and watching and making sure that when they make this rule that they can make sure that it will benefit them in the long run.
And my last question I got for you is that when you guys go to Daytona here in just a couple of weeks for Speed Week, you normally will have drivers that are out there to run a few laps to get qualified to run any of the truck or the Xfinity races. Do you think that ARCA should change that policy as to just letting drivers, because I think it was last year or maybe it was 2 years ago where Darrell Wallace Jr., he came out and he only ran about three laps just to get his qualifying in to show the to get his license to run at Daytona. Do you think ARCA needs to change that, or do you feel that you guys are okay with drivers kind of filling the field up just so that they can get their license to run in either the trucks or Xfinity?
Yeah, that's the thing that the ARCA series is kind of known for. That's what really sets it apart from K&N, because K&N, you have drivers that, you know, look at Chase Elliott. He ran a couple full seasons of K&N. That's fine and dandy. You're a good driver. But at the same time, in order to move on to a full truck ride or a full Xfinity ride, you must make those ARCA starts. So he ran Pocono, and I believe he won there too. Look at Corey LaJoie, did the same thing. So it's kind of what sets ARCA apart from K&N. And it definitely makes for some good racing. Like when I ran at Kentucky, Daniel Suarez showed up, Ben Rhodes. Those are some really good cars that really made for good racing at the front. So I think it's definitely a good thing about the series. And the series can often connect itself to successful cup drivers. You know, you look at a Daytona 500 field, and half the drivers, maybe three-quarters, have at least one ARCA start. So that's kind of a cool thing for ARCA to be able to say.
Well, Mike, I appreciate you taking the time to come out on tonight. I'm going to throw you back over to Tim.
All right, thank you.
All right, Steve, ladies and gentlemen, that's Stephen Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com. Stephen, I know you got to go, bud. Thanks for coming on. We'll talk at you next week.
All right, Mike, talk to you guys later. And Tony, hey, we got a couple more weeks, and I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to come after you this season in fantasy racing.
You know, I was on there today, and I was going to ask Tim tonight what our password is, because I was ready. I thought, I've got to get my game together so I can get on Steven.
Well, yeah, I'll give you a little insight. Now, I probably shouldn't tell you guys this, but I'll go ahead and tell you guys this. I'm bringing a guy over from Bleacher Report that has done their fantasy racing for the last 2 years. In fact, he's in the Toyota Fantasy Hall of Fame for winning six of the last eight seasons in fantasy racing, not only at NASCAR's fantasy racing, but a couple of independent leagues, too.
Okay, well, let me put it to you this way. You know, I'm always talking to Tim and Suzanne, but if I let you win my rings from winning the Indianapolis 500, could you share that information with me?
Well, he's going to be writing on the site for us this year. So you'll see his articles; they'll be out there for everybody to see.
And I do have a Rolex for winning that race, so you know we can talk.
we'll see what we can put together. I'll give you some inside knowledge and send you some links once he starts writing for us.
Oh, okay. I can't wait. Congratulations.
Well, thanks, bud. You guys have fun tonight, and thanks a lot. I'll talk to you all again next week. And Michael, congratulations this past weekend. I know that was a hard race to run the 24 hours out there.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you guys later.
All right. See you, Steven.
See you, Steven. Okay, Michael, that was my good friend, Steven Wilson, CEO of SpeedwayDigest.com. I want to ask a question, and I'm going to hand you over. I hate to keep jumping in. This is a Tony B segment. This is Everything Open Wheel. He does Indy, ASA, all that stuff. But, Michael, I got one quick question. I know you went down and run the last test there at Daytona with the ARCA car. And my good friend Will Kimmel, you know, I met you here at Talladega Super Speedway last year. I don't know if you remember me, but Will run that new composite bot, and he was the only one that actually run it. Did you get to turn any laps in it, Michael?
No, I didn't get a chance to turn any laps in Will's car. This year I have my own ARCA team now. It's Lyra Motorsports, so we're doing our own ARCA team. We still have somewhat of an affiliation with Kimmel Racing. Our development driver, David Levine, is going to be starting Daytona with them. But Will did tell me that it went well. What they were experimenting with was a back bumper cover, because if you notice on the Gen 6, if you ever see a picture of it, the back kind of has a lip and it kind of raises up. So they're experimenting with whether they wanted to leave that up or cover it. And he said that it was good, but just in the draft it was different because the car is a different size than the other cars. It's taller and wider. But the thing looks amazing. If you've ever seen a picture of it, I mean, it's a gorgeous car.
Oh, yeah, Michael. Yeah, I've seen the picture, and I've seen some of Will's posts. And Will did say, from what I remember from one of his posts on Facebook or Twitter or what have you, he did say it was like it was a smaller car, and it did act different in the draft.
Exactly.
Yeah. But, Michael, I'm going to hand you over to Tony, and I know your time is limited, but I'm gonna step out, Tony, and go take a pit stop, because I've been on here for an hour and 15 minutes. I'm going to take a pit stop, and Tony, you and Mr. Michael Lear from Lear Motorsports, y'all talk that Rolex 24 stuff, and I'll be back in just a minute, bud.
All right, thank you, buddy.
How are you, Michael?
Great, how are you?
I'm doing very well. During your how long were your segments during the race?
To start with, we did one-hour stints, which is, a one-hour stint is a single stint because that's how long it takes for the fuel to run out in the car.
Right.
So we did one-hour stints in the beginning so that everybody got a chance to get in the car in case something happened. We all got to say that we ran the Rolex. So, and then about the second stint in, we had a gearbox issue, and that kind of put us in the garage for about 6 or 7 hours overnight. And that was the next car
we
tried again at, like, I think it was like 12 o'clock, 1 in the morning at night. And then I ran an hour at first, then I did a two-hour stint, and then I did another one-hour stint after taking a little nap in the morning. At about 11 a.m. I did my last stint, and then two more drivers went in. We made it to the checkers, which was cool. I mean, we spent a lot of time in the garage and kind of ran in the back, but it was definitely a cool experience just to make it to the end of that race.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible that, you know, until you've done it, it is incredible. The fans, they come and they go, and, you know, and Daytona is really good about getting the fans in prior and after the race. And the garage areas were fabulous. You know, with the Daytona prototypes, you know, we had great garage area, and, you know, it was awesome. What's it like to get passed by one of them guys in the quick area, you know, like on the back stretch before you go into the chicane?
Yeah, that's actually what I was going to mention, because whenever anyone asks me about a DP, that's the section that I mentioned, because that backstretch, if you're entering the bus stop because the bus stop is the name of the chicane, if you're entering that turn and you look in your mirror, there's nothing in your mirror at all. You're like, I'm good to go. You'll take the left turn, and there's a small straightaway, and then you turn right. By the time you turn right, the spotter's on the radio. He says, prototype car approaching. And then as soon as you get out of the corner, he's passing you. You're like, what in the world? Where did that thing come from? It's like a spaceship. Crazy.
I mean, just incredible. I mean, the difference in, was you in the GT car or what division?
I was in a GTD car, which is the slowest class, you can say. It's
well, that's okay. They're all fast, and they're all incredible.
In the old Grand Am series.
Okay, but Yeah, those Daytona prototypes, you know, they get them moving. And, you know, you got to give a lot of credit to those guys for not running over everybody. Because
yeah, it takes that's definitely a special skill.
It does take a special skill. And, you know, I was talking to Scott Pruitt, and he said, you know, hey, if you miss that bus stop best you can, you go straight. If you know you're going to miss it, go straight, which you can't do. There is, they do something about it, but, I mean, that is a very, very high-speed stretch to get to there, and them boys are moving.
Yeah, if you're not on point with how you're on the brakes and where you get on the brakes and how you enter that turn, you're not going to make it. You want to make sure that you go straight and not through the grass.
And, you know, unless you have been there and driven in it or worked in it or seen it, I don't think people realize how much of the high bank track that they use. They use a great deal of it. And there are some, those cars have got to be set up for many aspects. And it takes a lot of work. And,
it's definitely a tricky thing because you've got this long straightaway where you want no downforce, but then you get to the end of the straightaway and you've got turn one of the scariest turns in racing, I think.
Yeah.
You can't even see it by the time you start braking for it, and you really want a lot of downforce there, so it's like you have to kind of even yourself out and find a happy medium.
Did you have any rain throughout the course of the race?
I think it started sprinkling at one point. It rained in the morning of the start of the race, but my whole experience stayed dry, so that's good.
Well, good. Yeah. You know, being I did fuel during our win, but during the course of the race, but previous to that, you know, we always got to find something to do. And as a tire specialist, I help with tires, and in 2013, we ran both, and Continental Tire, you know, after working with Firestone in the IndyCar series, they're great folks. But let me tell you, Continental Tire does a great job for Tudor.
Yeah, I was definitely happy with our tires. They gave us the tire for the Rolex race was different than the one, because I also ran the Continental race and a GS Mustang. It was a different kind of tire, and it's a much harder compound. We were actually able to double stint the tires with the fuel. We were able to run 2 hours on a set of tires. They really just never fall off.
Wow. So you could run them hard, and laps were a good thing to you.
The first lap is like ice. The second one is okay.
Yep.
The third one is best. And then it stays almost the same for 2 hours after that. It's amazing.
Wow, that is amazing. I mean, it throws me back into IndyCar when we had the reds and the blacks. And, you know, the reds were good to go because they were softer. And they wouldn't last as long. But I can tell you, the harder compound you can get, the longer you can run. And if you can go deep in a segment, you can make a lot of time up at a track like Daytona.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely helps you out in a long race like that. You want to have good fuel mileage, not have to make a lot of long pit stops.
Yeah. I heard you throw a name out earlier. Did you say Berlin Speedway?
Yeah, I raced there a couple times in the ARCA series.
Yeah, that's a great track up by Grand Rapids, Michigan, and I've spent a lot of time there myself, and that's a great racetrack. And last time I was at that track, Mark Martin was still with ASA. And
yeah, that's I wasn't around to see the ASA series.
I've heard a lot about it.
Yeah, well, I was National Safety Director for ASA for 10-plus years and graduated a lot of great guys to NASCAR, and had a lot of fun at Berlin. And then you throw out Winchester, which is, wow, one of my favorites. And Salem is, you know, it's a twin. So, you say you're going to run about 16 ARCA races next year?
Yes, 16. I'm only 17 right now, so I have to skip a few. Daytona, Chicago, Talladega, and Michigan. But then I plan on running everything else. I might do what Austin Wayne Self did last year to get points, and I'm allowed to run a lap in practice at those tracks that I'm not approved for so that I qualify for, like, Rookie of the Year points or just for a good points position. So maybe run for Rookie of the Year this season, try and win that.
That's fantastic. And when you're not running ARCA, are you going to do some Xfinity or Camping World Truck Series, or
it all kind of... Right now, I'm a firm believer in making sure that you're ready for the next step. As of now, I mean, I don't sugarcoat things. I haven't had an ARCA top five. I haven't had an ARCA pole. I haven't had an ARCA win. So that's kind of my goal for this year is to get a few of those, of each of those. That's when I feel like I'm ready. When I show up to the racetrack and people are like, oh, Michael Lear's here, I have to race him. That's what I got to race for the win. That's when you're ready to move to the next step, like a truck or an Xfinity. And that's how you make a good name for yourself. So I'm only 17, so I'm not in a huge rush to do that. This season, I'll be taking every off week that I have from ARCA and running my super late model and pro late model here at New Smyrna.
Very good.
Only a couple minutes from the house, so... But who knows, maybe by the end of the season you'll see me in a truck a couple times.
Well, that would be awesome. And I have a close friend, Brian Clawson, and I love what you said about I'm only 17. And I, you know, I'm looking at Clawson going, come on, kid. You're over 24 years old. We got to go. That window of opportunity is only so big. And, you know, he's got an IndyCar ride, but, you know, it's probably one of the slowest teams out there. But, you know, he's going to end up being like another Dave Darling running and setting records at home tracks because his window of opportunity is closed. But yours is just open, and you've got plenty of time, brother. And I love what you're doing, and... You're gonna make a go of it.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
At 17, that's amazing. And I'm so doggone old, I don't even know if I can remember back then.
Can't be too long.
Tell me I'm back.
Oh, hey, he's back. You know what? In IndyCar, that was a long pit stop.
Well, I have been back for a while. I was just sitting back listening to y'all because I love listening to Michael, and you know, we've had Will on the show. I mean, and we've had some of the older guys. We've had Tiger Term. I love listening to the young and upcoming driver stories, and then you got the older generation that's been there. I mean, I was just sitting back listening, y'all.
Well, that's awesome, man. Had a lot of good times with the younger drivers, and to get to talk to Tiger Tom, wow. I mean, it's incredible what we do on this show. Tim, Steven, and Suzanne, they do an incredible job, and I'm just glad you got on here, Michael, and that you ran the 24 hours at Daytona, and that's incredible, and that's something that Tim needs to put on his bucket list, is go there.
That's definitely a bucket list race for sure.
absolutely.
Yeah, I will definitely do that, Michael. And thanks for that, Tony. And, Michael, I know your time is limited, but I have a couple questions if you got just a few minutes. I want to ask you, I don't know if Tony asked you while I went and I had a pit stop. What is it like actually running a 24-hour race, which I know you're 17 years old, and I'll go ahead and tell you, I'm fixing to be 45 this summer, so I used to could stay up late, but I can't no more. I done got old, bud. But do you take naps, or what is, you know, as far as running that 24 hours, which I know you have different drivers, are you so hyped up that you can't really take a nap, and what do you eat as far as food, trying to keep your, trying to keep everything up, bud?
Well, 24-hour race is really just me taking a day and doing everything that I love to do. Nothing but racing, eating, and sleeping. That's kind of what I love to do. So it was a good day for me, for sure. So eating-wise, I'm not very good eating-wise. I'll be honest. I don't eat very well. I wasn't the guy, like, eating grapes or fruit or whatever before I got in the car. I just eat whatever I like. So I probably need to get better about that soon. But I didn't have a problem in a two-hour stint. I never got tired, so that's good. But, I stayed up late. Car was broken for about 6 or 7 hours until about 11. And then I had to stay up again because I had to get right back in for a two-hour stint. But right before that, I was kind of dozing off before I got in. So as soon as I got out of the car, my parents took me to my motorhome and made me go straight to my bed. And I slept for, like, 2-3 hours, and then kind of weird waking up, like, and then putting your race suit on and getting in a race car. It's kind of an awkward, weird thing. It's like, you know, you wake up in the morning and wash your face off. You're like, your body's like, what are you doing to me? Like, I just woke up, and now you've got me driving at, like, 200 miles an hour. And it's like 100 degrees in here. Like, what's going on? So it's definitely a weird experience, but it was really cool. I had, like, bags under my eyes and stuff when I got out of the car. It was funny.
I bet you did, Michael. And again, I want to thank you. I want to thank your mom, Amanda. I had hit her up earlier about you coming on the show, and which I knew you had a busy weekend, and she hit me up this morning. I said, yes, ma'am, we'd love to have him on. But, at this time, Michael, I know you have a busy schedule, but we let everybody that calls in, we let them thank their sponsors and whoever they want to thank. So you got the floor, bud.
Yeah, I definitely want to, like you said, thank my parents. You know, I couldn't do this without either of them. You know, my dad worked so hard to make sure that I can drive all these nice cars at these nice racetracks and stuff. I'm a very lucky kid, for sure. And my mom, I'm lucky to have my mom. You know, she's the one that brings me to the racetrack all the time, never missed one of my races in my entire life. So I'm definitely glad that I have her support and my family's support. And Gary Yeomans Ford Racing, attorneyoflaw.com, definitely some great sponsors that have helped me out throughout my career.
Yeah, great, Michael. And we want to congratulate you on your career. Congratulate you on what you've done as far as the Rolex deal, everything that you've done with Kimmel Motorsports. And I want to ask a question. I think the ARCA test at Talladega here is, I think it's the second week in April. Am I correct, Michael, or have you heard anything?
That's usually when it is. That's what it was last year. I haven't checked on it yet.
Okay. I think that's when it is, and I will be out there. Suzanne Kink, she's got to work. I'm on take off work, so that's probably when I'll see you next at the test here at Talladega. And Tony B, do you have any last thoughts for Michael Lear?
Just congratulations on his career, and just to let him know that window's wide open for him. And keep doing what you're doing, Michael. At 17. You've come a long way, and there's some good and some great things out there for you. And if there's any way I can help in any way, don't hesitate to call.
All right. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Michael. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
We'll get you back on the show as soon as we can. And, Tony B., thank you. You're Good night, ladies and gentlemen, from Talladega, Alabama.
This old man and me were at the bar and we were having us some beers and swapping out on cares, talking politics, blonde and redhead chicks, old dogs and new tricks and habits we ain't kicked. We talked about God's grace, all the hell we raised. And then I heard the old man say, God is great, and beer is good, and people are crazy. He said, I fought two wars, been married and divorced. What brings you to Ohio? He said, damn if I know. We talked an hour or two about every girl we knew, what all we put them through, like two old boys will do. We pondered life and death. He lit a cigarette, said, these damn things will kill me. God is great, beer is good, and people are crazy. Last call is 2 a.m., I said goodbye to him, I never talked to him again. Then one sunny day, saw the old man's face, front page obituary, he was a millionaire, he left his fortune to some guy he barely knew, his kids were mad as hell, but me, I'm doing well, and I drive by the days, just say thanks and pray. And I left a six-pack right there on his grave. And I said, God is great, beer is good, and people are crazy. God is great, beer is good, and people are crazy. God is great, beer is good, and people are crazy.